You don't leave school and go to university. You leave school, you might work for a bit, then you might go to university, or you might go to university and work, or you might start a business and then go to university. Mm-hmm. And I think that universities have to be there for people's whole lives.
As an institution as well, we try to partner multiple disciplines. So the technical engineers, they need to know enough about market. They need to know enough about enterprise and economics.
Why would university invest the time and finances in order to bring the startups here for free?
This building, which we had to decide to sign the lease on in the middle of 2020, can you imagine a worse year to make a decision? You talk about return on investment. We had to, as a university, this is a £110 million commitment.
This is a car that's completely 100% designed and built by our students.
If you neglect your mental health so that you are not strong while you're trying to start a business and probably a family, then everybody will suffer.
One of the major challenges for sustainability is energy. We're using more and more of it, and we need it not only to come from renewable sources, but we need to use it really effectively.
Well, I feel with my business, I'm running it, and I'm lacking of some knowledge, some skills, or I'm not scaling the way I would like to scale. Is there any kind of short, fast-track courses? Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode. And today is an unusual episode, I would say, because we're not visiting brand, startup, or tech facility. We are at University Place. Future entrepreneurs don't need to become experts in all business areas, but there are some key factors and points that they need to know. And I think that's a good place where we can learn about HR, about marketing, about cash flow, about payroll in university. And they can teach that basics in order for you to have a solid background. Today we're gonna visit university, have a tour around their facilities, and talk how university helps and supports business and how they're preparing the future entrepreneurs and how the education sector looks like in general. So let's go. First time in university in Heriot Watt University and meeting with Professor Teig.
Pleased to meet you.
I believe we have a lot of things to walk around. I believe you have things to show, so I'm looking forward for this.
Excellent. Well, welcome to Heriot Watt University and welcome to our digitally enabled campus. We think it's a building and a dream that's perhaps tackled some of the traditional ways in which you do, university level education. Mm-hmm. So I'd be very happy to show you around some of the spaces that we've created that really, prepare our students to be the next leaders of industry.
Okay, you mentioned digital.
Digitally connected.
Digital connected, yeah. University.
So we're a global institution now. We have a substantial campus, our original campus in Edinburgh, in Scotland, in the UK. We're now here in Dubai, but also in Malaysia. And we actually have two other campuses in the UK. So it's really important for us to be able to communicate and to work seamlessly across those five different locations. So with that, digital is key. And students should feel like they're part of a global institution and not just a local building as we have here.
Based in one location.
Absolutely.
All right, cool. Let's have a look.
Great. Let's take a look. I think we can go this way. Okay, so we're now on our discovery floor, if you want to take it here. We're going to be looking through some of our fabrication labs and our innovation hub. But I think what I'll do is try to start with one of our latest installations. And this is to support the research that we do across our global campuses. So if I bring you into this here, this is a facility that we use for digital twinning. So as an institution, we have some priorities, and one of them, of course, is net zero and working towards a more sustainable future. So with that, we develop a lot of technology that is going to renewable energy technology that's going to better connect the different renewable energy resources we have with the demands in very different parts of the world. Okay. So as I said, we've got three campuses in very different environments. Our Malaysia campus is in the tropics. We're here in the desert. And Edinburgh is also in an extreme environment. It's quite cold there. So we have different demands and we have different renewable energy resources. So with that, we've installed a solar test site on the roof. And what we're doing is live monitoring of the solar panels and how they're working. So you can see here that we have solar panels here. They're currently taking energy in. Some of it's going to a load. They're doing some work for the building. And some of it is going to battery. And we're monitoring this on a minute-by-minute basis and how all the different components are performing. And if you like,
live footage from
and this is it, exactly. So we tried to do a little bit of storytelling and to show what we mean by a global institution. And this is our campus in Edinburgh. And we're linking straight there to our equivalent renewable energy test site in the UK. And we're able to just fly across through Google Earth to begin to tell a story about how different renewable energy and different systems can be optimized for different demands. And that's us here in Dubai. And with that, then we're able to live connect. There's a live stream of the roof. We're able to monitor the performance of the panels. Now, you might look at those straight away and say they're a bit dirty. Funnily enough, that's one of our challenges, is one of our experiments. Yeah. So look at how these things are performing.
Is it your innovation as a university or just like already existing solutions?
So we work with a lot of companies and we try to support those companies to develop innovations. So it's a really good partnership that Heriot-Watt has with industry. Mm. So we have core competencies and core technical expertise. Industry tends to have challenges. And then we try to have this knowledge transfer piece and we do it through systems testing like this. And we're able to work with them to, you know, develop their technology and sometimes even incubate the idea as a new spin-out company and see them realize the impact of our research.
Okay, so what was the reason to do that project?
So in that one in particular, we know one of the challenges here. So solar here in the Middle East, obviously there's lots of sun. Yeah, but solar panels, as you can see, quite dirty. They typically run at maybe 7%. Efficiency.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So if you keep them clean, though, they could be up 15, 16, maybe even 20%, which sounds good. But we like to take a holistic approach. We want to know about the techno-economics. Is it financially viable? You know, what is it good to put all that capital investment into a robot? And what stage would you get your payback?
Okay, nice. Well, I like that finally attaching sustainability to, well, profit or making sense in terms of finances.
Absolutely. I mean, that's a key thing for us, right? Because we're looking at making a difference. And often it is the techno-economics that really makes a difference. You can encourage people to adopt more sustainable futures, or you can actually make it a viable prospect for individuals and corporations to invest in more sustainable practices. Yeah. And then that's more likely to have a larger impact. So that's the approach that we like to take.
And I mean, you have on the roof, so it's like step away and you can do all the research. And
absolutely, it's so close. So we're now going on to the very sunny, and it's getting towards the middle of the day, so it's the hottest time of the day, coming to our solar test site.
Okay.
So this is where we install, and it really helps to demonstrate technology by, you know, just seeing them, right? And while some solar panels, or most solar panels, all look the same, the technology behind them can often be very different. So we're using different materials. And this is probably one that's a little bit more interesting than others, because this is called a bifacial solar panel. So that means it has an active layer on top that generates electricity, but it also has an active layer underneath, as you can see it.
And that looks nice and clean.
That looks nice and clean, right? Now, the cost of silicone, so the cost of the actual material itself is dropping so much. So it's not the expensive part of a solar panel anymore. Mm-hmm. So it's actually not that much more expensive to put that active layer on the bottom. And even if it just harnesses an extra percent or two from the reflections that bounce off
the
ground,
floor.
That's all it is. Yeah. Now, the challenge for us is to see, well, how do we optimize those reflections in different environments? So here, it's a concrete floor, whereas you might have these mounted in a desert where there's sand and there'd be different reflections, or you might have them in, I don't know, different parts of the world where perhaps you have more greenery or foliage on it.
Obviously, it will react in a different way.
Absolutely. So we're working with new companies here that are you know, trying to predict these new technologies, because these technologies come out and it's a great idea, but can we predict how they're going to perform over their lifetime, over that 25 years that we predict? Will they last 25 years? That's the type of work that we try to do here that gives that independent assessment of somebody's technology. And so that they can...
And would that make sense commercially?
in something like this, we're looking at how robotics can improve the overall, you know, performance and obviously viability of, you know, solar in region. And what it's doing here is it's just essentially trying to clean these panels and clean them regularly.
Is it like dry clean or?
Dry clean, absolutely, because water itself, there's an embodied energy into it, and there's a cost to that. So if you could do it a dry clean with these brushes that go over, and it passes about once a day. But we can also extrapolate out, and some of the larger installations that are in the desert, this thing might travel for kilometers on a daily basis. So probably we don't anticipate this is a good idea for the six or eight panels that we have here. We can certainly learn a lot from it and then understand how that might perform should it go 2 or 3 kilometers on a string out in the desert.
Okay. Basically do the math and expect.
Yeah. It's a pretty simple extrapolation.
All right, cool.
So I'm going to take you now into our robotics lab. And if you don't want to, it's going to zap in. So Fabian's going to walk us through some of the robotics here. And just to link some of what we were doing, you saw on the roof there that robotics and high tech is often the solution to so many of our societal challenges here. Harry Watt would be known for its robotics expertise. So we have this robotics lab in quite a nice part of the city where we're looking over the Burj Al Arab and the Palm out there. Yeah. It's not your traditional learning space.
Exactly.
We often expect students to be in maybe dusty libraries without many windows, but instead of that, we try to create these very inviting places to work. And we have Miko here, who is demonstrating how we work with robotics. So Miko is, hi there, our star of the show, who's saying hello at the moment. And with robotics, Miko and his friends are ones that can work in let's say, terrain that is less inviting to you and me. They can go into more remote areas or ones that have, you know, maybe they're too hot or they're too dangerous, and they can do all sorts of inspection and tasks. So I think the sensors are on. It is...
This robot is just scratching his arms.
Yeah, now. So Riki is also trying to get involved in it too. So Miko can react to the environment and move around depending on where people are, which is very important because some traditional robotics are more functional. Go forward, turn left.
Yeah.
Whereas I could give Miko an instruction to go down the hole and do something. And he will find his way. He will navigate people or moving obstacles and complete the task. And it's something like this that really brings it to life. So our students are able to program this. They're able to get all the data back. In fact, they can even see through Miko's eyes.
Sensors and cameras, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. So Ricci is another example of some of our robotics, and there's some here behind me too. This is a virtual reality robot. So in theory, I can put on my helmet, and I can move my arms, and as I do, it will mimic exactly what I do. And it's on wheels, or Ricci's on wheels, and can also walk around the university.
To be honest, I know that these kind of robotic arms are used even in the video production field, in mine.
Absolutely. Now, this to me is a more traditional type robot. This is one that might have been doing some welding for automotive sector. So whether you're welding doors to it. But what's really impressive about robots like this is partly their strength, agility, and speed. And those are not always things that go together. We think of things like agility and precision with more like ballerinas, and it's nimble and not necessarily strength. And then we think of strong things of being brute force and not having that element of precision. Yep. But robotics are tackling all of those and putting them together. So when you see, this is Popeye, big strong arm, working, you see all that come together as one piece, and it's very impressive. So energy is a key focus for Harry Watt University. You heard earlier about sustainability, and of course one of the major challenges for sustainability is energy. We're using more and more of it, and we need it not only to come from renewable sources, but we need to use it really effectively. So we partner with a lot of companies. For example, behind you, you see Wheload. They're a pump manufacturer, and they're able to demonstrate how these major pumps and valves and the flow loops, how they operate. And we love that element of digital twinning. We're able to compare the theoretical with the practical and see, is there a divergence? Why is there a divergence? Can we understand those systems? Yeah. And by understanding them, then we can optimize them.
So you mean Willow is an actual brand?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an international company, and we've partnered with them to support our students. And obviously, our students like interacting with real, commercially available technology.
And then it could be applied to...
Absolutely, yeah, bigger systems. So we're working with, you know, with our algorithms, mostly AI algorithms, to better predict their yield over time. And if you can predict better, then you're de-risking the upfront investment. And ultimately, that actually drives down the cost of a unit of energy over the lifetime of the installation. So those are the type of challenges that...
Basically, you can forecast more detailed.
Yeah, if you can forecast better, then you give more confidence to the person who might invest.
Okay.
And then obviously everything becomes just that little bit easier.
Right, what other cool stuff do you guys have?
What other cool stuff do we have? Well, I like our wind tunnels. These are some fluid mechanics, so it's interesting to know how fluids flow. So this is a wind tunnel where air gushes in here and through this central piece and then out the back. And this is where we do all sorts of analysis. So you could imagine in the automotive sector, we just take a dinky toy and we can put it in there and we can analyze how the fluid passes over the car. So there's lots more in an energy lab. Lots of hydraulic machinery over here I won't go through. But one of the biggest energy demands here in the Middle East, of course, is, you know, keeping thermal comfort, keeping this place nice and cool.
An AC.
Exactly. This is an AC unit. So this is, the science behind this is called psychrometry. And this is all the stuff that you don't see that's probably embedded in the ceiling here. But this gives our students the opportunity to see all the components that go into keeping the air nice and cool. And again, it's to make sure by understanding how these things work, they can optimize a part of it, or they can, you know, invent or innovate new solutions that would give you the same output and hopefully in a much more economical or sustainable way. So again, as a technical university, fabrication, making things is very important to us. We can't have engineers going out into society thinking that they can do everything. They need to have experienced it, they need to have done it themselves. So it's facilities like this that gives them the opportunity to develop new things.
Yeah, what's possible, basically.
What's possible, right? And we're looking at the cutting edge types of technology, and, you know, obviously 3D printing is some of you know, key to new innovation. Can you make a prototype quicker? Can you make it? And then it's that element of tactile learning as well. And as an institution as well, we try to partner multiple disciplines. So the technical engineers, they need to know enough about market. They need to know enough about enterprise and economics.
Okay.
But they'll often work with some of our students who are experts in economics or marketing to develop a new idea into a reality.
Yeah.
So this is our innovation hub. And it's another fabrication lab, but in a very safe environment and a low-skilled environment. So our students are invited to come and use our 3D printers just ad hoc. So it's just like perhaps photocopying, right? It's really simple, and it's for everybody. It's not a technical thing anymore. It's quite simple. 3D printing is obviously a fun one, and 3D printing now is becoming so much more accessible as it's getting cheaper. So lots of little innovations here. Here's a cool one. This came from our enterprise suite in Edinburgh. So this is called Turtle Pack, and this is a buoyancy aid that helps kids to swim. So they wear...
It's like a jacket, yeah.
Yeah, just a jacket, and as they get better at swimming, you can take...
smaller and smaller.
Smaller and smaller, so they're beginning to learn how to swim and get easier until eventually they'll take it out. Now, for me, I love this as an example because it shows how, from an engineering perspective, this is quite simple. It's not that technical. It's about buoyancy.
Yeah.
So pretty simple mechanics for an engineer. But what made this a success was that kind of innovative leap about what does the market actually want. And not only that, but things like the branding, the coloring, it's a desirable looking product. Most people, when they see it, say, oh, that's kind of cool. And that's not just a technical solution that will require that.
That's a business side already.
Absolutely, straight from the beginning. Yeah, and if we can do that from the earliest stage of development, then it's most likely to be successful. Mm. What you don't always want is, here's my amazing technical solution, now how are you going to market, brand, and make it economically viable? You really want to get that from the very, very beginning.
Okay.
So when we do incubation, that's what we're aiming at.
So this product is straight from the university?
Yes.
And it's in the market
it
as
is
a
on the
commercial?
Market. So you can look it up on Amazon. It's called Turtle Pack.
Turtle Pack.
Great name as well, right?
Yeah. Now we're talking marketing.
Now we're definitely talking marketing. And it's complementing marketing, because marketing obviously is a bigger focus, but obviously it involves an element of, you know, digital content now, more and more so. And understanding how people interact with media is obviously very important, as well as developing new types of media. So in platforms like this, we have a lot of augmented reality, which you might be familiar with. Essentially, you can pick up any digital device now and scan a QR code. Let me see if I can do it. I can take a journey. And this often is the first step before we even go to a full prototype, because you can imagine in very three-dimensional way, and I can move around it because it's augmented reality, how that works. And that's before you'd even make a prototype, like we saw in some of our fabrication labs.
Yeah, you can visualize.
Absolutely. So each of these our students can use to, you know, visualize and maybe go through that iterative design step before. And that in and of itself actually is a sustainable thing, because you're doing it in a digital interface.
You're not building first.
You're
and
not
testing,
building first. Yeah, and it's less and less of this trial and error. It's more about what can we assess.
That's
first.
Not Turtle Pack.
This is not Turtle Pack. This is a full virtual reality system. So what we have here are different tours that you can take. You can step into this, you can put in your whole virtual reality headset.
But why in the university? I mean, what is it? It sounds like entertainment already. Or
Not at all. So this is going to be the future of how we interact in virtual environments. So this may be, maybe a different form of this will be installed in your home or maybe in businesses in the future. Helps to connect maybe across campuses like us or in multinational institutions. You don't have to fly the whole way to California for that meeting. You might get involved here. And you can interact in a much more personable way, all right? It's not email anymore, it's not Teams or Zoom. It's you will have your avatars and you'll be able to walk around environments. And this one actually helps you walk around. So you interact with the floorboard there, and as you step, you move. So you're acting in a very natural way. So it's that kind of human interaction with digital technology that's very important.
So it's must to have now for universities, for education sector.
We would certainly think so. I think we are at the cutting edge here, because we're making it available to our students. We're challenging our students to use it. And it's incredible to see what students will come back with, because they're so enterprising, they're so innovative, they're so imaginative. And that's something that, you know, with age, you sometimes lose, because as you get older, you probably think about what can't be done. And it stops you being as innovative. So we, in a way, harness that creativity of our students, and we, you know, support them with all the tech around them so they can play with it. You know, and it doesn't feel like study, it doesn't feel like work, but they're advancing their ideas, and we're challenging them all the time, and it makes them really good graduates.
Any case that it surprised you?
I think I'm constantly surprised. I mean, last week we had a major success with our autonomous vehicles. So we have this really cool autonomous car, and it is one that can be programmed to be familiar with its environment, to be aware of things that are around it. So our students over the past 2 years have been working with new and innovative algorithms, and they're able to put them into reality. They're able to bring them up. And it's not just a simulation on a screen anymore. They went through that process, but they brought it the whole way through reality and then won a national competition with it. And now they're talking about how they're going to copyright or patent that code, how they're going to develop their own their own new enterprise, because they won a substantial financial award for it. And now they're going to reinvest in themselves. And that is the beginnings of something amazing.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm always surprised.
That's a proud moment.
Next week could be something else. Yeah. I'm absolutely certain of it. And we have all sorts of different exhibition space. When they have the opportunity, industry representatives will come in here and they'll want to know, what are we working on? What are our students working on? And they will display it, and they'll you know, create those great working relationships, and they'll obviously get snapped up with jobs. And that's. So I think I'm going to take us down. There's so much more to see on the campus throughout all these different learning spaces. But I thought I'd bring you down to the ground floor now, where we have what I mentioned already, some of our autonomous vehicles, where we do automotive engineering, yeah. How we link it with robotics and all of that. So we're in our ground floor now. This is a, well, in theory, it's a workshop, but it probably doesn't look like a traditional workshop. And one of the briefs when we designed this was to make sure that it was much more engineering of the future. Engineering isn't all about dirt. It can be about precision. It can be about, you know, innovation and creativity. And that's the type of future engineering that we have been working with. Mm. Here's another example, by the way, of an innovation. This is called Solaris Kit. And this came from Heriot Watt University as well. If you look it up online, they'll call themselves the first flat pack solar. And this comes in a box that looks quite like IKEA. And it has made solar so accessible because you can quickly just order one online and it'll show up and you will, it comes flat and you will build the pyramid out and you put the coil in here. This is one for hot water. And you might not think there's a huge need for hot water, but there actually is. Whether you're having a shower or whether you're disinfecting something, this has a lot of market across sub-Saharan Africa.
Remote areas or?
Absolutely, a lot of remote areas. It is a thermosiphon, and what essentially that means it doesn't need a pump. When the water heats up, it just comes to the top. So it'll naturally circulate, it'll take in the sun, heat up the water, and then you have your hot water for it. And it's replacing things like kerosene burning in, you know, which is, you know, environmentally terrible, but in small quarters can be quite toxic as well. Yeah. So it's a really
close
good
the areas, yeah.
Absolutely. So this is something that is working very well there, and it's also working in markets in more northern climates, so colder ones, for glamorous camping applications and heating up little paddling pools and that type of thing as well. So it's interesting how the same product has found different market depending on where it is in the world.
Right. So commercial case.
Absolutely, yeah. So Solaris case, one to look out for. Yeah, another one that's going to be here during our climate hub.
Look at that.
So we like this part of our facilities.
You kept for dessert in the end.
Keeping it for the end, yeah. You know, I mentioned already things about sustainability and renewables. We look at the demand for energy. And one of the demands for energy, of course, is transportation. How do we get around, you know? And we're used to petrol-driven cars, but it's not the future. So universities, it's kind of incumbent on us to look to future tech and to begin to develop future tech, and mobility and moving around and transport is one of the key challenges that we're beginning to address. So we heard about the robotics work that we did already. This here is an autonomous vehicle that is electrically powered. So it has all sorts of sensors in it, GPS, it knows where it is in the world. It has LiDAR, so it's able to touch and feel its way around. It can see its environment, so it can avoid obstacles. It even has forward-looking infrared, so thermal imaging. Yeah. So it's very, very aware of its surroundings, just as you and I are. As we look around, we have a sense of how far away we are from things, and we can make decisions.
A lot of data.
A lot of data.
So do you guys build it, or is like you got it and now adapting? And
We got it and we adapt. So when we invest in tech like this, we obviously make sure that it's not closed form. We have full open access to modify it, to reprogram it, to get it. So it's not like buying your car at home where you can't touch, right? Yeah. This here, we get right into the source code and our students are developing new and better algorithms, so it's smarter, it's more aware. And this is the one that recently won that award for navigating in smart cities.
Oh, the one that you mentioned.
That's right, they just recently won $200,000 for their competition and they're now really kickstarting their enterprise and their entrepreneurial journey as well.
I think UAE or Dubai announced driverless taxis.
It's a real, you know, it's a real ask here in the Middle East, and it's about thinking about those cities of the future. Dubai already is a futuristic city, but it's not resting on its laurels. It's thinking about the future of what that will look like, you know. And autonomous vehicles are certainly there, whether it's autonomous delivery of your takeaway from Deliveroo and Talabat, or whether it is, you know, how we're going to get from A to B in Ubers of the future that, and other brands are available, Kareem, for example. Those are all the challenges that we're looking at. And our students start from the beginning. So this is a car that's completely 100% designed and built by our students. So the whole frame is not bought. This comes from our students themselves. And this is a formula student. We have a a team called HW Racing or Heriot Watt Racing, and they develop this whole chassis and the engine, and they put it all together, and they compete on an annual basis in Silverstone in the UK.
Okay, so what, universities come with their own bullets?
So about 120 different universities enter the competition. Not all of them make it to track. We do generally, and when we do, we perform quite well. It's not wheel-to-wheel racing like you might know it. There's all sorts of skid tests and scrutineering that goes into health and safety, which is obviously a key element of
distance
engineering.
Or
yeah, absolutely. But there's acceleration tests, and then there's endurance tests. How long are you going to last? You'll have driver changes. It's a very complex competition over a 4-day period.
Sounds exciting.
It is tremendously exciting. It really brings to life, you know, the what you're learning in university. It's not on a page anymore. You know, when you have to implement it, and it's going to affect your performance when you compete. And so the students who take part in these experiential, you know, competitions, they're the ones that really do best, because they're ready for the challenges that are going to face them when they graduate and go into industry.
So basically, you guys have a smart students talent in-house university.
Absolutely.
And so how common is a brand to approach you or access and look for, and like you said, delivery companies, you know?
So we have been established a long time, over 200 years, and we were set up as an institution that was going to support the local economy. And that is something that has stayed true to us for those 200 years. So even when we move countries or we establish ourselves overseas, we look to partner with local companies and ministries to address the challenges that might be in country. And so it is very common for us to work with all those external stakeholders. And we do it not just through the research that we do, but obviously what we call future skills. Are we preparing our students for future challenges? So not just, you know, extra capacity for existing industry, but are they the ones that are going to challenge convention? Are they the future leaders of industry?
Things that are not in demand now, maybe, yeah?
Exactly. But we kind of know what the challenges are. We know what needs to be addressed. You know, every country here is talking about the 2030, 2035, 2050 ambitions. How are we facing up to those challenges, and how is the university sector and Heriot Watt University preparing students to make a real contribution, a real impact on those, you know, environmental, sustainable, and, you know, societal challenges?
Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot.
Very welcome. It's been a pleasure. Are we out?
Thanks a lot for having a chat with me. What I'm trying to find out, and what I want to hear, how to calculate return on investment to the education.
So you invest in education, and what is the return?
Yes.
Education is human capital, and the concept of capital for all of us is that you invest in it and you get a return. And actually, that's true, by the way, of jobs. So, work experience, skills, experience you get in a job is also human capital. And, you know, you choose to join a company, you choose to invest in your career in that company, and that's also, you expect a return. You expect that company to develop you and train you, and you expect to learn something from that experience. So we're all looking for return on investment for our investment in human capital. And let's not forget, there are only 168 hours in the week. Mm. That includes sleeping. So I have to ration my investment of time, so do you. And I expect a return from where I invest my time.
Yeah.
So how do you calculate your return on investment? Well, you can calculate it, if you want to, in sheer amounts of money. All of the research that's ever been done pretty well in the whole world shows that the more you invest in education, the more financial reward you will make. But that's a very simplistic, very consolidated return. I like to think that the more I invest in my own human capital, the more I will enjoy what I do. We do, all of us, have a limited time on this earth, and I want to make sure that, number one, I have an impact in a positive way on the world and on people, and number two, that I make enough money to achieve the things that I want to do. Now, I think you can do that through investing in education.
Okay. So if we're looking at the university, it's not only for, for people that finish school and then going to university to pursue their careers, but also for, it could be for the entrepreneurs like me.
So that's a very 21st century definition, what you've just said there, of I finish school, I go to university.
Yes.
That is not the norm, and it's certainly not how this university started. So we started 202 years ago in 1821, and we were founded to provide nighttime education to people who were already working. So we didn't take people from school right from the beginning. In 1821, our first lecture was actually in chemistry. It was on a Friday night, October the 16th, 1821. 400 people showed up. They all had jobs.
Yeah.
So okay. They hadn't left school. And to that day, this is what we do. You know, we still here in Dubai, we provide all of our postgraduate education here at night and at the weekend so that people can work and upskill themselves, and that is what it is. So Heriot Watt University is quite an unusual, distinctive university, and that it was created to upskill people out at work.
What are the options, for example? What are the length of the courses?
So here you can literally, in this university, and again, this is very different to other universities, it could be the whole of your life. If you do our MBA, there is no time limit on finishing. Mm. So our MBA has been studied for over 30 years. I sometimes meet people who started it 15, 17 years ago, did some of it, went off and did something else or had a family or whatever, and then have come back and finished it. So our MBA, there is a very lengthy opportunity. It's, yeah. It's lifelong learning, and you can take as long as you want.
You can study for life.
Yeah, you can study for life. For other degrees, if you study for a postgraduate research degree, a doctorate, I have a PhD. I did my PhD while working. If you do your PhD here while working, it can take you 7 years. On the other hand, if you come to us straight into year two because you've got an amazing set of A-levels, for instance, if you've gone through, the British system and you've got unbelievably good marks in your A-levels, you can join us in year two. And if you want to, you can leave at the end of year three. You won't have an honours degree, but you can leave at the end of year three. So you can come here and get a degree in 2 years.
Okay.
So 2 years, 20 years,
depends,
anything in
yeah.
between, it's up to you.
And let's say for an entrepreneur. Okay, let's take my example. I feel with my business, I'm running it, and I'm lacking of some knowledge, some skills, or I'm not scaling the way I would like to scale. Is there any kind of short, fast track courses?
Well, there's two different ways that we help entrepreneurs who want to scale. The first is that we run an incubation program here. So we offer people the opportunity to base their business here. I mean, literally in this room.
Okay. In university, you have an incubator.
In the university, we have an incubator. You could we take a at the moment. We might increase the intake in the future. But right now, we only take one intake a year. We take 10 businesses in. We don't charge them any rent. They have all of our facilities. Very reasonably provided canteens, meeting rooms, IT infrastructure, everything for free,
okay,
for a year. And we also put on seminars for them on a regular basis, so two or three times a month, that help them with raising money, branding, etc. Now, they don't have to go to every single one, but we don't just offer free office space. We want to know that people are participating in this and that they are going to engage with us to grow.
Yeah.
So one of the things we look for when we get applicants is who is going to engage in this program. So that's one way that you can scale your business with us.
Okay.
Come and bring it here and you will get access to free education to help you grow your business. The second thing that people often do is to do just one unit in the MBA or two units, because our MBA is sold by the unit.
Okay. For example, project management, how long it could take?
So we deliver it over three weekends.
Three weekends. Okay, so you can send even your, manager or someone to upscale.
Yeah, then you don't have to take then the exam, of course, if you don't want to. But most people do take the exam. I mean, I would say 95% of people sit the exam because they think, well, even if I don't want to do the whole MBA now, I want to have that credit in my back pocket.
Yeah.
And then I can come back at any time and okay. do some more credits.
Keep adding it. Yeah. And then what could be the range of the price, for example, for the unit?
Well, the whole MBA is 109,000 dirham at the moment, which is very competitive. Mm. Considering that we fly in most of the teachers here, and as I said, it's taught at the weekends. But you divide that by 9 to get to the course unit
okay.
price.
Because it was 9 units.
There are 9 units okay. in an MBA. Yeah.
yeah.
So it's a real opportunity to do that bit by bit by bit. If you do a whole degree here, then, you know, like a master's degree, then you're looking at, you know, 80,000 dirham, something like that, to do a straightforward master's degree. Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
But that's more like a full-on for a year in the evenings. As I said, we teach in the evening so that people can have a job or a startup in a day.
Yeah. I would like to also get back to incubator, whatever you just mentioned. Mm-hmm. Why would university invest the time and finances in order to bring the startups here for free?
I started our incubator actually in Scotland in 2018. So I joined the university in 2016. Okay. I joined as the head of the business school. I was the global head of the business school. So, you know, Dubai, including every part of the business school everywhere. And I thought it was a great shame that we didn't have any businesses actually operating inside the business school. So you had a business school and there were no businesses. In fact, the only business was the cafeteria.
Okay.
Which was outsourced to
a company. University itself is a business.
Well, our university is a charity.
Okay.
Yeah. Our university is a not-for-profit charity that was started in 1821. And we don't make any profit. There is no shareholder, unlike, you know, several other private universities in this part of the world. I felt it was an integral part of the ecosystem. You know, to actually have businesses working alongside students who are studying business.
Inside university, yeah. Mm. Okay.
But I think it's also very important for us. We have always had a long track record. We're a science university, and we've always had a long track record of stuff coming out of the lab that has been, at one point, we had the UK's biggest ever spin out from a university.
So basically, in the university investing to attract the startups in order to create an ecosystem in the university.
Yes.
So
yes.
Students can kind of as well get...
So that the businesses themselves can... They get a lot of help from each other. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting. I didn't start the incubator in Dubai until I moved here. So I moved here in September of 22, and we started then the incubator here in Dubai as well. And the first year we took five companies. Okay, we would have taken 10, but we didn't have 10 quality companies apply. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to be making money, but it has to be a good idea.
Yeah.
And you have to show me that you've really thought about it and put the sweat equity in. And you have to also want to, as I said, participate in our program and make the most of what the university has to offer. We don't just want a free ride on the tenancy.
Exactly.
Anyway. So that was year one. This is now year two. It's now September. It's October now, 2023.
Okay, so this is the second year.
So this is now the second year. We said we would take another 10 businesses. We had 70 applications, 70. Yeah.
Okay, and you choose 10.
So we choose 10.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, this was much harder.
Yeah.
And next year we can only really support 10 because of the it creates an ecosystem, not just with the students and them and the staff, but also each other.
Yeah, exactly. All the ecosystem. Oh, it's interesting. What's your opinion? How do you think, how we need to calculate, how we need to think? For example, you know, when you're running a business, you're already busy and you can spend a lot of time on development. Obviously, you have family and free time for your mental health. How to as well find a time and squeeze in that kind of either education course or even come here in an incubator and work on top of that. What should be the mindset?
I encourage people every year, once a year, to sit down and write down, right, what are your goals? And separately, what are your priorities? Mm. And if your goals are to become a unicorn and to really have a very successful business...
Forget the sleep.
Well, and your number one priority is sleep, or family recreation time or whatever, you're going to be struggling.
Yeah, okay.
And I think sometimes people are unrealistic about their priorities and their purpose. And so we encourage everybody here, actually every student here, we teach them how to develop their own, what we call an impact statement, which is, what is their purpose in life and what impact do they want to make on the world? And get them to articulate it. It's very important for job interviews. It's very important for this kind of thing, employability, to be able to talk about yourself and what your aspirations are. But we also do this with the businesses that start here. We get them to clearly define their goals, their ambitions, and then you can say to them, right, this is what you say you want to prioritize, mm-hmm. but this is how you're allocating your time.
Yeah.
The other thing about mental health, it is a very important thing that as an entrepreneur, it is really, really important that you also look after yourself. Now, when I explain this to people, I liken it to the safety briefing that people get on an aeroplane. So they always say, if the oxygen fails, the oxygen mask will come. And the next thing they say is, put it on yourself first. Yeah. Yes? Exactly. And then you can help other people. And this is what I would say about mental health. If you neglect your mental health so that you are not strong while you're trying to start a business and probably a family and everything else, and maybe also an education at the same time, then everybody will suffer.
Yeah.
And it might feel selfish, and it does feel selfish. I give you a very good example of this. In the financial breakdown, in 2008-9, my business, in those days I was an entrepreneur and I was running a business and we had to make some very difficult decisions and we had to cut back the business and everything else. And I really needed to invest in myself to be strong enough to carry everybody through this, and my family, my three children and my husband. So I took actually another job at the weekend. Mm-hmm. And with the money from that job, I bought myself flying lessons and I qualified as a pilot. And it took me 2.5 years because I was only doing it at the weekends. You know, I mean, there are much quicker ways to become a pilot. Okay. But when I was up in the air, you know, I could only think about how was I going to get the plane back down on the ground. Okay. And that cleared my mind of everything. And I stopped worrying about whether I could refinance the business, whether I had enough clients to make it through to the end of the year, and whether or not I had remembered to sew on the naming tapes onto some of child's clothes for school. And, you know, would I get a coach for one of my children to get through his physics exam? I didn't think about things like this. Yeah. All I thought about was, have I done the right checks? And can I get this plane back safely back down onto the ground?
So basically you took... On the plane, you're not taking any of your problems or issues with the business. That's your focus.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was my mental health investment.
So that helped.
Yeah.
To overcome all these challenges.
When I actually put the plane back down on the ground and all my messages come on my phone and everything again, then, but I was completely rested mentally.
Okay. All right. Thanks for sharing that. That's interesting. Well, we spoke about, let's say, entrepreneurs that are already building something. What about students? How students should look at university if they know that they wanna start entrepreneurship journey or startup or something?
First of all, we have courses on this subject. So we have courses here that take you as an undergraduate student and a postgraduate student. They're different courses, but they do the same job, which is they take you from, I want to start a business, but I've no idea what, which takes you through the process of looking for gaps, looking for opportunities, looking at data, looking at demographics, thinking about what's going to be needed next, et cetera, all the way through to having an elevator pitch. Mm. And then we have a second batch of courses that take you from an elevator pitch to a fully formed business plan. Another very, very useful way for our students to work out what kind of businesses they want to start is through competitions. We recently won the Dubai RTA a project on, it was a competition actually, on autonomous driving and autonomous cars. And we won, I mean, it's a serious prize, $200,000.
I think I saw on social media a check.
Yeah.
Well, a group of students was
That's
holding
right,
it.
Yeah. And they were presented by the Crown Prince of Dubai. It was, yeah, it was serious, $200,000 a check. But it wasn't to go and buy them themselves an autonomous car. It was to invest in further research.
Yeah.
And out of this, the students have come forward with 5 patents that they want to file.
So what it takes to be a good university, what are the measures?
Well, you know, there's lots of different measures of what it takes to be a good university. But for me personally, I want to see our students coming out and being very employable. That to me is. But that wouldn't be what other universities would measure by. I'm very proud of our outcome, as I said, of our outcome statistics. We show over and over and again that students that come through here do very well in the job market. And that's been the case since 1821, because that's what we set up to do. You know, we set up to help people get better jobs. So if you set up to do that, then you're still doing it 200 odd years later. There are, of course, third-party measures. Lots of people look at, for instance, the QS university rankings. Mm. There are, you know, by some definitions, there are about 10,000 universities in the world. But the QS university rankings look at the top 1,500, and we just broke into the top 250. And so it's, for us, I mean, that includes, like, all the big universities in America, you know,
yeah,
everything. For us, that's... We're really pleased with that. It was our goal to get into the top 250 by 25, but we're already there.
So that's because of the students that are finishing, or the lecturers so
The QS rankings look at where your students end up, but they mostly look at your reputation in the areas that you research and teach in. And they poll a lot of people around the world, like thousands and thousands and thousands of people, to ask them which universities they rate. Mainly they poll employers.
Mm. Okay. Can you tell me more about, so what's the future of education? Well, we had a walking tour and we saw already beautiful facilities, but how the university using technology? What kind of innovations you guys applying for education in university?
Well, this building has everything from, you know, using things like virtual reality to teach, which we do here, to building in sufficient connectivity to run big robotics experiments. And we use, by the way, we use a lot of this for things like school engagement. So schools come in here and build robots upstairs on the 6th floor and run at the weekends, you know, robot competitions everywhere and things like this. So, you know, you enable the building to... allow you to teach in a very interactive way.
Is there any dedicated courses about sustainability?
Well, we have degrees in transition, in energy transition. We have degrees in sustainable engineering. You might think those are the same things, but they're not. You know, energy transition is about developing new sources of energy that will allow us eventually over time to replace fossil fuels. Now, that's not going to happen overnight, and we're not one of those universities that has said we don't want to have anything to do with petrocarbons. I mean, you know, we live in a petrocarbon economy here. It is without doubt the money from petrocarbons that will allow the transition of the world to a non-petrocarbon position.
Yeah.
So I think we have to acknowledge that, and the contribution that the major petrocarbon companies around the world, and I don't just mean in this part of the world, but in every part of the world, have made to developing alternative energy sources, and the investments they've made in that have been really, really important.
Yeah, this is going to grow as well.
Yeah, and it's going to grow enormously. Yes. So, you can study those things here. More importantly, you know, even if you're doing a business degree, you could write your dissertation entirely on an energy transition subject if you wished. There's, you know, we allow students to, you know, within reason, we allow students to focus on any business that they that they want to pursue and look at.
But I'm trying to understand, even from the business side, to be sustainable, it costs more for the business, or sustainability helps business to grow and survive?
Well, I think there's lots of different areas in which sustainability helps. I mean, frankly, I don't think that we would have a very good time of it in the employment market if we weren't very focused on sustainability, because certainly the generations behind me are very fussy where they choose and go to work. And if they think that a company is being very wasteful and not respectful of the environment, I promise you, they, on the whole, doesn't matter what you pay, they don't want to go and work. The employment market will drive this. Disclosure, required disclosure will drive this. And the final thing that will drive this is sheer business sense. Okay. So when we fitted out this building, it cost a bit more money to make it so that if I don't move in my office, the light goes off.
Okay.
Right.
All the sensors.
Yes. So all the sensors that we put in, they cost money, those sensors. So if you were really on a one-year basis trying to minimise the cost...
You wouldn't have installed this.
You wouldn't put them in.
Yeah.
Okay. And there are plenty of evenings I'm sitting here late at night on a conference call and it all goes dark because I haven't moved.
On your Zoom recording.
I'm just standing on my Zoom and I haven't moved. I have to do this to get the light to go back on. But do you know something? We did a forecast for this building of the energy use, and we have every year we have saved 20% of what we expected to spend because we put all those sensors in. Now, that's a business decision. And that's a longer-term investment decision over a shorter-term priority decision.
Yeah.
So I think all of these things, you know, the employment market will drive it, the disclosure market will drive it, and then the sheer practical, you know, the number of dirham going out the door will drive it.
Yeah. What's the challenges, for example, to run a university right now?
Personally, I think to lead a university requires an extraordinary amount of patience. And I got this job when I was already at an age that I had accumulated quite a lot of experience and therefore a bit more patience. You have a lot of different people involved, a lot of different stakeholders. It's not as simple, especially in a not-for-profit university. You haven't got the single shareholder saying, right, you know, maximize the profit or whatever, you know. So it's almost harder, actually, to lead a not-for-profit, because instead of a single profit motive, you have multiple stakeholders and multiple KPIs that you have to meet in terms of outcomes. So what I'm measured on is what jobs my students go to, not what profit I make. And you have to start measuring that. We also, of course, you know, we are very honoured to be guests in this country, and we want to contribute to the UAE's national plan. And so I also measure myself on how are we contributing to the UAE's national plan, which is why we're so focused on things like robotics and AI and energy transition, because this is all also part of the UAE national plan.
So like patents and our companies.
So how do you lead a company? You lead a university by having due respect for the country you're operating in, by having a focus on your staff, because if you have happy and fulfilled staff, you honestly will have happy students.
Yeah.
And also by making sure that you support the capability building of the nation where you are based.
Mm-hmm. So you say, you guys not for profit. At end of the day, still operating like a business.
Well, you obviously can't run at a loss, because if you run at a loss, then you know, there is such a thing as an ex not-for-profit, like a not-for-profit that has died. You know, I've got to be financially sustainable.
Yeah.
So you can't make a loss, but you're not trying to. Every penny we make in a surplus is reinvested in
back
into the students and the university.
You mentioned 300 people you need to recruit. That's a lot.
300 staff.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. So we don't have a huge turnover, but we have a normal turnover of staff, and also we're growing. So the 300 is going up. So some people naturally leave occasionally, and B, we have extra people to increase, and we have to bring those staff from all over the world. Yes, but that's what's so great about being here in the UAE, is that there aren't lots of restrictions on where you can bring staff from. You know, if I was in the UK, I would have a lot of restrictions about how where I could bring staff from.
Yeah. Okay, so it opens.
Yes, this is a very, very entrepreneurial system here in the UAE. So it really supports the growth of businesses, even if they're not-for-profit businesses like mine.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And for the closing, we spoke about it, how the future of education could look like, but how do you see, how would you like to build the next 5 years, either education or either this university? What would you like to bring or change?
So for our university, the key road over the next 5 years is that we are currently undergoing re-accreditation because we're moving from being locally regulated here in Dubai to being regulated by the UAE as a whole, which means that we are moving to be regulated by the Commission for Academic Accreditation, which is part of the Ministry of Education. Now, this is a level of accreditation and recognition that is on a par with the most senior universities in the UAE.
Okay.
And we are doing that because we've been here 18 years and we are very committed to being here for at least another 18 years. And we want to be recognized on a par with all of those other universities.
But why do you need that? Because to help to grow or?
We will be using this as a means of moving out of being, you know, focused completely on teaching, much more into research. So we do quite a lot of research now, but a lot of it is done in Scotland. What I would like to see for us is that more of that research that is currently done in Scotland is done here, and that we also substantially scale our PhD candidates and the number of students that are studying with us for PhDs, because that's how you capability build here. You know, you have more PhDs in energy transition, in robotics and autonomous engineering and so on.
And that attracts as well interest.
And that will bring people, that will bring the best minds. So by expanding research and building capability, that's what I think that our future is in the UAE. If you ask me about the future of education per se, I think it is about the fact that education is a lifelong experience. Going back to what you said about you leave university, you go to you leave school, you go to university. You don't leave school and go to university. You leave school, you might work for a bit, then you might go to university, or you might go to university and work, or you might start a business and then go to university. Mm-hmm. And I think that universities have to be there for people's whole lives. And they have to be somewhere that people come back to and go back again. You know, I qualified as an accountant at the age of 60 because I went back and studied again, you know, during COVID because I wanted to qualify as an accountant. Anybody can do that. Anybody can go back at any stage of their lives and increase the store of their human capital. And I would encourage people to do that. And I think that's what the future of education will be, supporting people's lifelong learning.
Okay, so the mindset should change. For example, let's say before this interview, before I was preparing for that, I thought, okay, school, university, go to the life, do the business, not turn back.
One of my greatest happinesses in my time in the university, and remember, I only came to this university 7 years ago, and before that, I had a life as an investment banker and an entrepreneur, so I'm not a lifelong academic. But one of my greatest happinesses has been when we were able to put our MBA program into a refugee camp in the Lebanon. And that was possible because it's asynchronous and we could download it onto computers and then it doesn't matter if the internet goes down mm-hmm. because internet connection in a refugee camp is very unreliable.
Yeah.
In fact, electricity in a refugee camp is very unreliable. But it meant that people whose education had been interrupted because of the war in different countries and because of conflict, how were able to finish or were able to get a degree at all. And the first of our refugee MBAs graduated in December of last year. And to me, that was worth every minute I've worked here. You know, just that one person graduating.
Yeah.
And that is the future of education. It is to enable and to grow people and to create a better world. And whether you do that through teaching people how to run electricity out of solar panels, or whether you you enable it through handing a computer that's fully loaded with asynchronous material to a refugee in the Lebanon. I don't think that matters. I think what matters is that we enable people to create a better future and meet the challenges of the world.
And make education accessible.
Yeah, and make education, if you look at the US sustainability goals, education should be a right and it should provide opportunity.
Okay, great. Well, on that note, Mona, thank you so much for a nice chat.
All right, guys, I don't think about any better idea how to finish this episode while driving in driverless car, driving backwards. Super happy and excited about the fact that universities let us in. They are trusting us to show their facilities and talk about education and business itself. So definitely changed my mind. I think one key takeaway from today that education is not a linear thing. It's not like school, university, and you know, entrepreneurship or full-time job. You keep learning and keep educating yourself all the time. Keep coming back. Keep carry on educating yourself in order to improve whatever you're trying to achieve. And another thing is important about mental health. How do you find this peace? Like Professor Heather found her safe space while flying the plane. So thank you guys for checking in. I hope you enjoyed. I hope you learned as well, like me. Let me unclip my seatbelt. Looking forward to see you in the next episode. Have a nice day.